The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Follow Justin's 90-day transformation from pudgy to ripped right here each week on Mind Pump. To get Justin's exact phased workout and diet plan, go to mindpumpradio.com and click the big yellow button at the top of the page.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump with your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Welcome to Mind Pump, easily the best show in the universe.
Oh, yeah.
That was better?
According that was better.
Here we go. You're listening to Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
That's right.
That's right.
And it's tight.
It's Q&A. It's... Really?
It's tight butthole, bro.
It's wow.
All
thanks,
the way.
Thanks for clarifying. It's Q&A time.
Yeah.
Yes. Do we have a song for that, Justin? Q&A time.
Hey, we
it's
have
Q&A to, the deal time. Is just we're about to answer your questions.
God, damn. Why? I don't
voice.
Know why. You
beautiful you have
the,
voice.
The voice of an angel.
I listen to a lot of R. Kelly.
So we have to do we have to do a Q&A where somebody
thing.
Gets some good takeaways, because I feel like we just did a Q&A where
we went a little sideways.
Yeah, well, I think we gave some good information.
Right. If you dissect it,
we did. We gave some good information. Not a lot of fitness information.
Someone had told me the other day, and I was totally offended. They said, you know, sometimes you guys get off topic and talk about crazy shit.
What?
That's yeah. What?
Can I just say,
do we do that?
Never.
No.
We're not even doing that right now.
Do you guys get annoyed? Do you guys get annoyed by critiques? I get a little annoyed by critiques when people try.
No one.
You know what you should do. Yeah, you know what you should do.
No, I love it.
Yeah, you like it.
I take it as a compliment.
Cool story.
Yeah, I thought it was a compliment.
Yeah, like, well, that's why I say cool story, bro. Yeah.
I was like, thank you.
Cool story.
All right, first question. This is from,
start with how bad we're doing.
This is.
I love to listen to that.
Yeah, we're doing really bad. So first question from the number from 13 Lucky. This is one of our Instagram followers, and the question is, what are our thoughts on metabolic damage and reverse dieting?
Beautiful topic.
Mm-hmm.
Very good question. This is probably one of the most overlooked things and probably one of the biggest challenges as a personal trainer that we have.
Well, why don't we define? Define
and how do we get to? Yeah, how do we get to metabolic damage?
What is metabolic damage?
What takes
mean?
Us there?
So metabolic damage basically means you've screwed your metabolism up. And there's several ways that we can do this. The most common way that one messes their metabolism up is for a very long period of time of not feeding your body what it needs nutritionally to run. And I normally, when I explain metabolic damage to a person in layman's term, I normally explain the analogy like a vehicle. So if you imagine your car engine, and you neglect changing the oil forever, you neglect rotating your tires, your timing belt is squealing and all off, you can still drive the car. You know, it'll move still, just like your body will still go. But how effective will it run? It's pretty bad, and it's probably only a matter of time before it breaks down. And it's kind of like what happens when you, for long periods of time, have not been feeding the body properly, or yo-yo dieting, or, you know, extreme dieting, where you're not feeding the body anything, trying to lose weight that way, and then eventually your body kind of almost shuts down.
It takes time to get out of that space.
Well, it actually takes a very long time, and the longer you've been banging it up, the longer it works. So let's say, for example, you've kind of screwed up your diet for a little while. And this is a topic I have. This is very close to home.
And this
right
is
now.
A real phenomenon. As trainers, we've seen it in clients.
Oh,
I've seen it many times.
Yeah. I just shared a very good YouTube podcast on a doctor talking about this with one of my clients, because, you know, I have clients that are overweight and 200, 300 plus pounds. And, you know, these are the most common people that have been, you know, poor eating habits for a really long time. And by poor, it doesn't necessarily always mean that you're eating, you know, McDonald's every single day. It could just mean that, like I said, you're not feeding the body nutritionally what it needs. If you're 200, 300 pounds, your body needs a lot of nutrients to sustain. And you know, most people like that have probably had some sort of issues with food, whether it be, you know, the psychological conditions that they use with it, that's caused them to underfeed it or not feed it properly. And it's caused this metabolic damage for a long period of time. And the longer it's caused damage, the longer it's going to take you to get out. So one of the hardest things for me to sit down and explain to somebody is that, hey, and this is normally how this goes, and it's very tough to explain to somebody who's coming to you to lose over 100 pounds, and you say, guess what? I actually don't want you to lose any weight for the first maybe 6 months.
Yeah, we got to fix your metabolism. Right.
And they look at you like, you 6 months, I'm going to pay for training from you, and you're going to help me, and I'm not going to lose any weight? Mm-hmm. Well, I could do that on my own. What the fuck? Yeah. You know? Yeah.
No, you can't.
And
no.
Yeah, exactly. And you brought up the very next question, which is reverse dieting, which is exactly what you do with somebody like this in order to get them back to where they need to be. And what you have to do with somebody is to slowly reintroduce these foods. Obviously, if I take somebody, which here's the mistake I used to make as a young trainer. As a young trainer, we used to have all these tools where I could calculate how much you weigh and everything like that. And I could implement it into a computer and it kicked me off. This is what your body needs. Your body needs X amount of grams of carbohydrates, protein, and these are the calories that you need. And so it tells me that. And then you hand that to a client who doesn't eat nowhere near that. And they either, one, blow up from it and they start putting on a ton of weight from that. Or two, they're just so stuffed they can't even come close to finish the meal.
Yeah, the definition of reverse dieting literally is a slow process into eating properly. That's what they mean by reverse. Mm-hmm. You don't hit it like with a freaking sledgehammer right off the bat. You got to move them through slowly. I just experienced this with a client recently who's been with me for a little while, and she was so meticulous about what she ate because she was so afraid of gaining, you know, a half a pound. And anytime she went off her diet just a little bit, she'd gain a couple pounds, and it would take her weeks to lose those 2 pounds again. Mm. This is somebody who counted every single calorie, but she didn't exercise properly. Mm-hmm. And her nutrition wasn't, you know, as good as it is now, for example. Well, I told her, I said, listen, once we fix your metabolism and you have a weekend out with your husband, that's not going to happen anymore. And it's funny because she almost didn't believe me. She's like, well, that's just the way my body works. Well, now guess what? Mm-hmm. She'll go wine tasting, whatever. She'll go enjoy herself. No gain, no weight gain. And we're starting to fix her metabolism. So this is a very, very real, real thing when it comes to your metabolism. And it basically means that if you're in a really shitty situation for a long time, just like Adam was saying, you know, you're going to have to just get healthy first.
Right.
Yes.
So that means stop looking at the scale and just get those good habits. Start eating more vegetables, start eating more fruit, start eating, you know, less of the processed stuff. Just start getting used to certain things and take it one step at a time. And then what ends up happening with this, by the way, is your results become more permanent.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want results that come and go, then go crazy and do your crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Well, just think of this. Let's say, okay, so let's take the example of someone who's 200 plus pounds. They come to you and you say, it's the first thing I always do before I even write a diet plan for someone or a nutrition plan for someone is I want to see what you're currently doing. So right. I give them, I say, here's the deal. You know, you get started with me. I want to see a week of your eating. I want you to eat normal. Don't try and impress me. I want to know exactly what you consume. And then I go back and I look and, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, this 200 something pound person is eating like 900 calories one day, 1700 another day, then back down to 700 calories and up to 2400 calories. And they're like averaging out like maybe 1100 calories top, and they're 200 and something pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So extremely low for their body already. So, and then you come to me and you want to lose weight. Well, okay, well, law of thermodynamics, if I want to make this person lose weight and their metabolism is now used to only 1100 calories, that means I got to take you down to like 600 calories
mm-hmm.
in order to show you like a consistent weight loss, which is only going to last so long.
And
too.
How's that for longevity? Yeah,
exactly. Extremely unhealthy. It's not realistic. Man. And it's also why that same person, just like Sal was saying, you know, she goes out and she does well. Like, so she's at 600 calories and she goes for a while. She's dropping maybe a pound every once in a while. And then she goes to that one night out with her husband, or decides to go drinking one time, and then boom, three pounds comes right back on. Because all it takes is for you to have one meal out that could consist of 1,500 to 2,000 calories in an eating out meal, which is very easy to do.
Easy.
And you just intook four times your daily intake in one sitting. You bet your ass you're going to put on a pound mm-hmm. from that. So, you know, you are way, and this is real similar to what we talked about with Justin's progress right now in his mm-hmm. journey is if you're eating correctly and you're training correctly with your trainer or by yourself, and you're not seeing any movement on the scale, that's okay. Good shit is happening right now. If you're eating properly and you're working out, just because the scale is not necessarily moving one way or the other does not mean stuff is happening.
Give it some time.
It takes time. And a lot of time, just so you know, the longer you've been going not paying attention to what you're eating and doing this, the longer it's going to take you to do it correctly.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
And take some of those elements out, like with the scale, and focus on the positives, you know, focus on your energy, you know, focus on the things that are going to motivate you, to drive you, because it's a long haul, you know. Performance in the gym is a great one. Yeah. Like how your clothes fit, you know, your energy levels, like all that kind of stuff. So
excellent. Next question. This is from Jay Cisneros. The question is, What is the difference in working muscles basically in like a lengthened position or a shortened range? So the example he gave is like the difference between a tricep, an overhead tricep extension, where you feel a stretch in the tricep, versus say a kickback, a tricep kickback where you feel most of the tension in the contracted position.
Mm-hmm.
Now in the past, they used to call exercises, you know, they used to have the compound exercises and then they had the finishers. Finishers tend to be the exercises that would squeeze muscles the most, right? So like a finisher for chest was like a cable crossover, right? Because you get a real hard squeeze. Here's the science behind all this. Muscles are very specific in the way they adapt to resistance. So if you're doing an exercise that's putting most of the resistance in a lengthened position,
mm-hmm.
Then most of your strength gains are going to come from that lengthened position.
Right.
This is why it's important to incorporate all of these different positions.
Different angles and yeah.
Different lengths. Angles. Yeah. So you can pretty much break it down into three angles. And I'm not even talking about the different types of muscle contraction.
Mm-hmm.
You have exercises that give you a good stretch. You have exercises that are kind of mid-range,
mm-hmm.
and then you have exercises that give you a good squeeze. And so now you have your resistance, your lengthened, and your middle, and in your shortened. So using the chest as an example, a stretched exercise would be a free weight dumbbell fly, mm-hmm. right? Most of the resistance is at the bottom. Towards the top, there's not much resistance.
Right, you're in open position.
Yeah, you're not really fighting gravity at the top.
Right.
A mid-range exercise would be the bench press.
Bench press.
And then your squeeze again would be like a pec deck or a cable crossover.
Right.
So I would say use them all. And each one of them in studies have shown different types of adaptation, and you can benefit from each of those. I will say, however, that exercises in that mid-range tend to be the big mass builder compound movement. So
you're getting a little bit of both. That's why
it kind of is. Like for example, like a deadlift. There's no real stretch or real squeeze, you know, at the top, or a barbell squat. You know, it's more of that mid range. And so the mid range stuff tends to be the heavier load type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back in the day, I remember this. This was a book in the early 90s. It was called Positions of Flexing. It was an Iron Man magazine like special thing or whatever. And the routine consisted of each body part, three exercises, one exercise in the mid-range, one exercise in the stretch, and one exercise in the contracted position. It's actually pretty brilliant, if you think of it, for them to put it together that way. So I would say, you know, work on all those. And then they do find, by the way, in the lengthened position, resistance in lengthened position does stimulate something called mTOR, M-T-O-R, in muscle, which is responsible for muscle growth. And this is why I always emphasize a really, in a safe way, of course, a really full range of motion
with all your reps.
And you know who was really big on that? Arnold back in the day. Arnold Schwarzenegger. You ever watch him do flies? Remember Pumping Iron?
Yeah.
Ridiculous range of motion, right?
Right.
No.
And he would talk about how that stretch would help him build muscle. I feel like we miss that. I see guys in the gym and they some guys get the squeeze, but not a lot of people.
Better movement, too.
Much better, yeah.
Yeah,
and
that's,
I noticed
that's the one reason why I tend to lean a little bit more towards the lengthened position contraction.
Really?
Yeah.
I noticed that that's the one that people tend to miss.
Mm-hmm.
Like they'll get the squeeze, but I don't see a lot of people focusing on like that stretch. Like for the back,
mm-hmm.
you know, when people are doing like a cable row, you know, the old school way of doing a cable row.
Yeah,
right?
Letting come all the way forward, almost like you're rowing a boat.
Like, yeah, where they like lead forward.
Yeah.
And then we were taught as trainers that's bad form because that's using the erector.
All
yeah.
the way
yeah.
And, then,
and
yeah.
in reality, what they're doing is they're getting their lats to stretch and then they're coming up and they're squeezing.
Yeah. Right.
And that's how I a lot of times do my cable
This is
row.
Such a great point, too, because we talked about this on another Q&A with, you know, trainers or people wanting to critique form and going up and saying something to somebody who they think that they're doing bad form. And you know, there's so many things in fitness that, you know, are contradicting as far as your certification tells you, like, oh, this
because there's so many gurus.
Yeah.
Here's the thing is they have to have a stance that defines who they are in their program. And so this is where a lot of trainers get caught up in that.
And we should be honest with the listeners. Really, the only gurus you should listen to are the ones you're listening to right now.
Pretty much. That's pretty much
everybody right. else is full of shit.
So yeah. I used to teach.
Good point, Sal.
Because bicep and tricep is probably one of the most common ones when people ask this question. And so like Sal used the chest analogy, I used to use the bis and tris and elbow positioning. It used to crack me up when you'd see somebody stand at like the cable pushdowns and they do like cable pushdowns, reverse pushdowns, and the rope, and then the triangle.
Oh, where they're rotating their hands?
Yeah, where you're pronating or supinating your hands, and
which has nothing to do with the tricep.
Exactly, right. It has nothing to do whatsoever. So the difference between the rope and the triangle and the reverse grip is virtually the same thing on your tricep. Obviously, there's a tad bit of a variation because of the
grips.
Your grips and your forearms have to activate a little bit different. But as far as the work that's getting on your tricep, but you take the position of your elbow in that position where you're doing a push down, and then you do an overhead extension, and then you do a skull crusher. So think about where your elbows are positioned. Your elbows are down by your side at one point, then your elbows are up at about 90 degrees, and then your elbows are pinned all the way back.
Now you've got good variation.
And I think, too, like some of it depends on your goals, whether it's an aesthetic goal or whether it's a functional goal, you know, or sports performance, too. What types of exercises are going to dictate that, right? So, I mean, that's kind of where I stand with
you
that.
Were talking about different types of muscle contractions earlier when we were off air. Why
right.
don't you go into that?
So, the
bit?
Concentric, isometric, and eccentric phase. So,
what are each of them? Because a lot of people don't know. When you say
concentric is like your prime movement, right? So, out of the exercise.
When you're flexing, right?
Right, when you're flexing. So, that's the one that most people are familiar with. And then, when you get an isometric part of the contraction, you're holding that resistance.
So you're just holding the squeeze.
Yeah, just holding the squeeze. And then obviously eccentric now is making sure that like you're resisting the load on the way back to starting position.
So lowering the weight.
Lowering the weight and basically what they call like a negative, mm-hmm. right? So there's a place for each one of those. I mean, you could split them up. You could do them all together in a specific tempo, or you could really just focus on one element of that and change your whole workout up. Mm-hmm. And I know Adam's even mentioned that before. Really a great tool to keep in your toolbox. So.
I love to mess with this.
Well, there's a place for each one of those.
Well, they've already determined eccentric, the lowering of weight, causes the most muscle damage. It's also responsible for the most muscle growth.
Right. And so that's why I feel personally that it's one of the biggest ones to address in the beginning, right? So if you can't properly decelerate, if you can't decelerating is where everybody's injuries typically come from, right?
It's normally where most people suck.
Yeah. And so if you can't control your momentum and your force and properly, you know, that's something that we need to really work on and establish strength with.
Well, with the muscle damage, there's some theories behind that because there's something called the sliding filament theory with how muscle fibers contract. But if you think of think of a piece of Velcro and how the Velcro sticks to itself. So that's how muscle fibers work. This is the prevailing theory. And then it contracts. Well, when you're lowering away, you're asking those hooks, those attachments to release under load. And so it causes muscle damage. It's actually tearing muscle fibers more than the other types of contractions. Number one, it builds more muscle. But number two, it's also responsible for more overtraining. So if you just like, oh, I'm going to go do like a bunch of negatives, you're going to fuck yourself real hard.
Yeah, that's going to be
impactful. And I have another theory. This is something that I've noticed also. So there is one particular type of athlete that lifts lots of weights that doesn't focus on the eccentric in a lot of their movements. And these are the Olympic lifters. Because they'll do like a power movement, a cleaner snatch.
It's all explosive. It's all one.
And then they drop
one.
The weight.
It's all 1-1-1.
You get rid of,
they drop the weight. They don't do the eccentric. Mm-mm, mm-mm. Now, one thing you'll notice about Olympic lifters is they're incredibly strong for their size. So they don't necessarily build as much muscle as someone who focuses on the eccentric movement.
Ah,
so you're getting lots of fast contraction, lots of fat, but you're not getting necessarily the muscle hypertrophy stimulate aspect. Right. This is why lowering the weight under control, if you're trying to build muscle visibly, is important.
Absolutely.
Right. Is important.
Well, you know that, what is it, on the eccentric motion, we can carry 4 times the load that we can on the concentric.
Yeah, you can lower way more weight under control than you can lift.
And
you,
rarely ever will you see somebody. So typically for your eccentric, your deceleration, like Justin's talking about, is your typical for hypertrophy, so for building muscle, is a 4-second negative, which... I tell you what, you know, I'm huge on this. I love to play with rest periods.
Yeah, it's a long.
It is a very long.
Time. 4 seconds is for long.
Yeah,
that's
take
forever.
It. Take your bench press and you know what? That's what I'm like. You know, a lot of times, you know, I'm big on using a lighter weight in a more controlled manner and getting the same effects or better effects than the guy next to me who's pushing out three times the weight I'm doing super fast and hard, like Sal was saying, like an Olympic
unless
lifter.
You're an Olympic lifter and you, yeah,
yeah, if,
your
especially
whole thing
if,
is power.
If you're, if, yeah, if you're all
no, there's,
of a,
there's benefits to the speed too, but what you're saying, I hear what you're saying because you're saying that if you want, like your goal is aesthetics,
you'll
use the control.
Well, and not to mention too, it's a much safer way. It's a much better way to teach somebody form and technique.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously, if you're doing something
for the general person who wants to get fit, you know, do they need to do Olympic lifts? No, I'd probably stay away from those explosive.
Well, and this is the biggest thing, you know, beef I have with CrossFit. That's why I don't like it.
Right.
You know,
that's
I just don't
one.
Like that mentality. You know, I don't think people should be introduced to powerlifts.
No, it's
way
not,
until way later.
We always talk about that. That is such an advanced
such a bad
technique.
Idea.
A 1-1-1 is so advanced for somebody and so explosive that it's unless you're somebody who is extremely advanced and know how to keep yourself in perfect form when you take the body through full in an erratic full range of motion like that. You have no business doing it. If you if you're a beginner coming in, that's the I am not teaching you a tempo at 1-1-1. Before I teach you something like a 4-2-2, where I'm taking you slow 1-2-3-4, pause at the isometric, like you got a chance to talk a little bit about, pause for 1 to 2 seconds, hold where you're supposed to, then back
lower
up.
For 4. Yep.
So, definitely. And I tell you what, I challenge those that are listening right now. You want a little curveball in your workout. You know, literally go time yourself. Do that. Time yourself on your negative. Give it. And there's nothing that says you can't go 5 seconds or 6 seconds.
Bro, I did that. So we talked about this like 2 weeks ago, and I did that. Normally, when I go bust out pull-ups, I'll rip out anywhere between 16 to 20 something, right? I'll just pump them out.
Okay, and so, you did tempo pull-ups?
So I did real slow.
Oh,
I went up, I held, and I went all the way down. And I did like 10.
Oh, well,
and
that's pretty impressive. You can get your 10.
Bro, it was killer. Yeah. It was killer.
I probably could only get like 5 like that. Yeah. That's pretty tough.
Well, I only did one arm pull-up, so that's why I was doing. How are we doing on time, Doug?
That's not impressive.
All right, one more. So actually, this is a quick one. This is from A_AROED... W-A-R-D-S.
Aaron.
Edwards. Okay.
Sorry.
Question is, are tattoos and the meaning behind them? Well, I think I'll start since I have the least amount of tattoos between the two of you. Inked
I
up.
I think you're safe to say that.
Inked up crazy maniac. So I have one tattoo. It's on my upper back. It's called a Trinacria, which is a type of a symbol, otherwise known as a Triskel. You'll see them in the ancient world quite a bit. Mine in particular is the symbol of Sicily, which is where my family's from. So it's the head of Medusa in the middle, and there's three legs around her head. The head of Medusa is because Medusa was the goddess of Sicily, given to us by the Greeks. Of course, Sicily being in the middle of the Mediterranean, we had lots of empires, you know, spanning over where we're from. And then the three legs, of course, represent the fact that Sicilian men tend to have three legs. So it's actually it's the 3 points of Sicily. Sicily's shaped like a triangle, and they say it's the 3 points of Sicily. So so because I was born here, I'm first generation American. It's kind of like back to my family's roots. If I lived in when I go to Sicily, they make fun of me for having it. It'd be like a Californian having like the California bear on their shoulders.
NorCal.
Yeah, and which actually Adam has. Like, I was just making fun of that shit.
Talking shit. I got California.
Yeah,
right
he's
now.
Got LA on there too.
It'd be like some asshole with a California tattoo.
Oh shit.
So that's about it. And so I'll leave it to you,
Justin.
Out, guys. Justin.
Oh yeah. Oh, you want me to go? Okay.
Well, I guess I got the most. I think I had the most. So I probably should.
We have about 10 minutes.
You might. I don't know. I got two. So I have two angels on my ribs, actually. And
I have a bigger pieces, but more. I've got a ton on them.
They're pretty big. Yeah, they cover my entire ribs. But so I mean, I have a lot of actual like religious kind of symbolism, and some of it's like evil, some of it's good, and it's just really for me. I did that as like I was raised in a very conservative home, and a lot of times I spent growing up in the church, and I would sit in this, was it like a little kids club kind of thing, and they had this imagery. So this artist Doré, I always looked at his work, and I was just like, wow, it was so like amazed by it. It was all this like crazy imagery of like demons and angels and you know, people in hell and like all this crazy shit. And I just was like, wow, that's so cool. And that always just stuck with me. And so I actually just put a lot of his style imagery as tattoos on me and stuff. And so I have like this devil guy, and I got like a Leviathan, and I have like, you know, a cross and thorns, and I have a lion, and so a lot of imagery there, because I, like I said, I grew up in the church and stuff, and so that was something that you know, is close to me. So
don't you have a family shield too, or something? What do you have? What else do you have? What's on your?
Oh no, on my back is a Celtic sun.
Come on, bro,
sun.
Go through all your tattoos.
Okay, I got a Celtic like sun on my back.
He's like vaguely talking about tattoos. He's like, well, I got all these tattoos.
They're
all
the stuff.
Come
you know,
on, bro, go through
there.
The tattoo. I'm sure they can. Yeah, let's. I mean, what's going on here, bro?
Yeah, so I mean, in the lion, it's got this. I mean, it's kind of like Lion of Judah, but it has like a crown, and then it kind of bleeds into the rest of it, trying to make a piece out of it with its mane kind of turning into fire, and then it gets like crazy. And then
what's that shield? What was the thing you were talking about?
Shield? I don't have a shield. It's a Celtic sun. Okay. And it's got the symbol of,
because you're Irish.
Yeah, because I'm Irish, and it traces of that. So. That's it, though. That's all I got.
What about the one
and on your... one on my butt?
That's what I was going to ask you about that. The one.
You know, that's just for my wife. You know,
right? All right, Adam, go ahead. And...
Well, I got a lot, bro. So,
Tell us about
everything on me has actually meaning. The only thing that does not is my very first tattoo, which is the stupid barbed wire tattoo. So the
Barbara.
Yeah, before Pamela.
Wait a minute,
Anderson.
Pamela Anderson.
Before Pamela Anderson.
Pre-Pamela.
Okay. This is before Pamela Anderson.
Say, if it's
popular.
An homage to her, like
it was the
know,
very first
I
tattoo I got. It was, you know, it was when I first turned 18 years old, and I picked it off a wall. My buddy and I both went in. He got the other generic tattoo. He got
eagle,
like a Chinese character.
Oh, Chinese character.
He got the Chinese character that
does he even know what it means?
Well, we think it means self-discipline, but who knows for sure, right? So he also picked it out of a book or off the wall. And then the barbed wire tattoo because, you know, I thought I had cool arms back then. It's about all I had back then when I was working out. So that was the only one that has no meaning. So I ended up building a sleeve. Now, I wouldn't build a sleeve until I had set myself financial goals, because I said to myself, if I ever had a job where I'd be exposed and it wouldn't look professional to have a sleeve, that I would. I've always wanted one, but I thought, okay, I better have enough money that I can afford to not have to work for somebody else. So once I achieved that, then the sleeve was on, and I had all these ideas and pieces that I want. So I'll start from the top, where I have this is my grandmother. So my grandmother, I was very, very close to. She passed away about 6 years ago. I lived with her when I first moved to the Bay Area, and you'll see that she's holding on to an apple.
That's probably the cleanest one you have for sure.
It
came out really good.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites for sure. And she's holding on to an apple. The apple represents, she used to call me the apple of her eye. So she's holding an apple. She's also got a deck of cards in her hair. Her and I used to play cards a lot. So, especially in her later years and stuff, that was kind of our thing, that her and I, she liked to gamble. I liked to gamble. We used to play cards together. On the inside of my arm, there's a scale with a skull and then jewels and money and stuff. And that's to represent, to have balance in my life. I'm a very money motivated person and driven. But it's also a reminder to have balance in my life, which ties in also to the loyalty tattoo that's on my rib cage. So I have the word loyalty written down my rib cage. And, you know, do you remember the exercise I did with all you guys where we picked the three characteristics that everyone, do you remember doing that as a trainer for me back when?
Sure.
Yeah. So I did an exercise with all my trainers where they had to pick the values to them that are really important. And I made them first start with five, then narrow down to three. And, you know, two of my three were balance and loyalty. So that's what those stand for. The cross is for my father. Now, you've heard me talk about my father before. When I refer to my dad, I refer to it's my stepdad that I'm actually talking about. My real father took his life when I was 7 years old. So the cross is to represent him. The eyes that are lightly shaded above the cross, or that his eyes are always watching me. The flowers that are near the cross are for the women in my family. So the big flower is my mother. The two flowers on the side of the cross are my sisters. That's also what you see. The lips inside of my bicep. When I was younger, I used to flex my bicep, and I used to make my sisters kiss my bicep. So they'd be sitting on the couch, and I'd walk up, and I'd shove my bicep in their face. And be like, kiss it, kiss it. And I'd make them kiss my bicep.
Kiss my gains.
Those are actually both my sister's lips, and I had them tattooed on the inside of my bicep. The birds, the front bird is a representation of myself and my friends that are following me. I've always been the leader in my group and friends and positions that I've always played leadership roles. The heart with the samurai sword through it, and then the scar and the bleeding on it, that's a reminder to be a better man for all the hearts that I've broken and the scars of my own. The committed is tattooed. The word committed is tattooed down my forearm. It represents I'm committed to pretty much anything I do. So if I put my mind to something, I'm committed. I'm all the way in. One of my best friends actually has that tattooed over his stomach. My cousin and I both have the California, which Sal was just teasing me about. I have the state of California with a star in NorCal to represent from NorCal. LA is not for Los Angeles. It's for my brother and I. So Larry and Adam. So I utilize like the LA looking symbol. It looks kind of like LA. So everybody thinks I'm a Dodger fan or something, but it's not. It's not that. It's his initials and my initials that are tied in together. The back of my tricep is the Scorpio symbol, and I think we got them all, didn't we? And then my birth date is, and then I have it says established 1981 because I'm established in 1981. That's when I was born.
Yeah.
And I think that's it, bro.
What about the one on your nuts?
Could have gone more
description
than mine.
That one's too big to explain. So. So that's it, man. That's a pretty.
Can I tell you about my unicorn?
Oh, no, no, no. When he's cold, it looks like an old man.
Alright. Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. For more information about this show and to get valuable free resources from Sal, Adam, and Justin, visit us at www.mindpumpradio.com. Until next time, this is Mind Pump.